The following programming is sponsored by Bruce Grossinger. The views expressed do not necessarily reflect the views of this station, its management, or Beasley Media Group.
The Sports Doctor is on the air. Dr. Bruce Grossinger with Rover Sports Tuesday evenings at 7:30 on WWDB. Dr. Bruce and the Rover crew blend sports and pop culture to keep you entertained and thinking. Brought to you by the Philadelphia Regenerative Medicine and Stem Cell Institute, where Dr. Grossinger and his team help athletes and chronic pain sufferers heal faster and stronger, often without the need for drugs or surgery. Visit online at phillysportsdoc.com and tune in to WWDB Tuesday nights at 7:30 for Rover Sports.
Welcome into Rover Sports. We're here atop a perch on a rainy Tuesday night. I am Sports Doc. We are Rover Sports. Spencer G, Josh Dashey. We've got our friend Charlie Bowles is on location, but he's going to call in for the Fearless Picks. Dr. Steve Lewis is on call tonight. We have Colin Newby behind the glass. We've got Matt Vito as our videographer. So much to break down tonight, and a lot going on with the college playoffs. The college, their conference finals are done, and we know because on Sunday, all of the rankings in the brackets were released. And I know there's a lot of dialogue and, frankly, a lot of turbulence here. And I'll let you lead off, Spencer. A lot of turbulence with respect to Alabama not making it. And some of the, I would advise everybody while you're listening to this to look at the brackets because we don't have them here. We might have Matt throw up the bracket at some point. But here's the point, but as far as the audience, we might throw that graphic in intermittently as we discuss it. What are your thoughts, Spencer? You attended the Big Ten Championship at Lucas Oil Stadium. Many of us, including Josh Dashey, an alum, saw an amazing game, rough and tumble game. Let's talk about that game first. We'll talk about some of the other games, then we'll roll. This segment will be dealing with college football.
So I thought that really Oregon's offense was, you know, pretty ridiculously good. Dylan Gabriel, 283, four touchdowns. Oregon rushes for about 210 yards. They had 483 yards of offense. Penn State had 520. And Oregon, with Dan Lanning and Tosh Lapoy, they've never been tested like Andy Kotelnicki and Penn State was able to do. So Oregon was just so efficient on third and fourth down that Penn State, a lot of the times, like I fought Josh, it was 28-10 right when Drew Aller threw that interception in the first half. I thought that the game could have ended right there. It didn't. Penn State got right back in the game, made it a one-score game, and I thought Aller and the offense showed a ton of resiliency out there. I thought that Singleton, Tyler Warren, I think Penn State's offensive coordinator's terrific. And I haven't really seen Penn State score on a team of that caliber in a very, very long time. I've never seen that offensive output against a top five team under James Franklin like that in many, many years.
Yeah, I would say watching the game, both teams had great offense, and it was very impressive. And I felt bad for Drew Aller because the sentinel play in the game was when, you know, Franklin dialed up a play, which was like a home run ball. And the ball was thrown. It must have been thrown 50 yards. But the duck, the guy who was covering the CB, just had better position on the wide receiver and made a diving interception. And I feel bad for Aller because he obviously took it hard because he played a great game. And I feel bad when a game turns on one play. Josh, let's talk about your review of the game. I'm sure you watched the whole thing.
First of all, one thing that was so emphasized was Penn State's penalties early on. A couple holding penalties, a couple face masks. The speed Oregon played with Penn State hadn't seen like that all season. Their defense just couldn't get stops. Spencer pointed out they couldn't get stops on third and fourth down. They kept hitting the receiver on a skinny post the entire time, anytime they needed. Dylan Gabriel got the ball out quick, and Penn State couldn't respond to it. Offensively, Penn State's offense look great. The reality is, Doc, Penn State gets rewarded for being competitive, okay? They get a six seed. They get to host SMU December 21st, and if they win, they'll play Boise State, which not for nothing. Boise State, congratulations. you get one of the buys, you're the third overall seed. But Penn State's got the easiest road to get to the national championship.
It's about time, because we've seen so many times, and you've been a fan for a long time, we've seen Penn State on the losing end of stuff. We've also seen Penn State get outboxed by Ohio State, Michigan. And it seems like this is an ideal scenario for a Penn State Nittany Lions. And we look at the teams, and SMU is a good team, and I think they do deserve to get in. And a lot of people believe that Alabama deserved to get in. But SMU was right there, and they fought very hard. It wasn't like they got blown out. But I think the fact that Penn State is hosting a game in Happy Valley against a team like SMU outdoors, I think that it sets up great. I'm sure Penn State, you guys are going to be out. You know, I don't know if you're going to do a whiteout, but they are doing a whiteout.
Because
that's pretty amazing. And why not, right?
Why not? And, you know, they expect it. They expect it up there. They expect it to be loud. I've spoken to a couple of former players that are students up there. They're going back for the game. It's they obviously have finals coming back, the 16th and 17th, but they're going back up there to see them.
Yeah. Spence, talk a little bit about the Rover sports fans. In fact, there's a lady named Lisa from Reading, and she didn't watch a lot of SMU Mustang football.
Yeah.
So I'd like to, well, obviously we're in a Penn State area,
yeah,
and a lot of people focus on the game. Give us a little preview of SMU and what will be the challenges for the Nittany Lions.
Yeah, so just at the game, just wanted to say this, that Penn State had about 80% of the fans in Indianapolis, and it was incredibly loud. It was louder at the Penn State-Oregon game than when it was Penn State-Michigan, because it was inside. The fans of Penn State are so excited about this team because you have Singleton, you have Catron Allen, Warren, like real stars on the offensive side. Even the backup quarterback, Bo Pribula, even runs a couple of times, and then Drew Aller's now in his second full season. But the Oregon fans are very quiet, very respectful, but very, very quiet, where it's even hard to like get them like really motivated. That's what I saw. Now, I've never been to Autzen Stadium. I hear it's totally different when you go to an Oregon home game, because here Penn State just totally dominated the fan matchup. I would say that, honestly, Penn State fans might be a little bit disappointed. If I were a Penn State fan, this is why I'm disappointed, because against SMU, you have no upside. So for winning a national championship, yes, this path is easier, but wouldn't it have been more fun if like Penn State was hosting a night game against Texas?
They are going to have a night game.
No, well, they're hosting a game against...
Is it a night game? Is SMU a night game?
But SMU,
well, that's cool. I like night
games. SMU is a group of five, not a big brand, not a big rival. Penn State's supposed to win. Like, wouldn't... I know your object is to win, but wouldn't you want a marquee game if you're Penn State? Wouldn't you want a great opponent? Wouldn't you want Tennessee coming in Penn State? And I fought the games early at 1 o'clock. Like, wouldn't you want Tennessee? Wouldn't you want to be challenged at home and have an epic moment? If you beat SMU by 20, who's going to remember this game in 3 years?
Here's my feeling. I don't think anybody's going to remember any teams that did not win the national championship. I've seen Penn State win national championships. Their teams for the ages. The fact also that you're playing a team that's more of a finesse team rather than getting beaten up, like Oregon is going to play the winner of Ohio State, Tennessee. Those guys are physical teams. They're all men. They're professionals. And I think Oregon has to worry because they're somewhat of a finesse team. I know I could look at Texas probably as the best defensive and one of the best offensive lines. But if I look at Ohio State, Tennessee, it gives me very physical. So you can say what the Oregon's going to play after those guys beat each other up, but they're going to play a team that's on a roll, that's hot, and then they're going to play Oregon, and that game's going to be at a neutral site, right?
Right. Yeah. But I still think like you guys are national championship or bust. But
everybody should be. Let's let Josh weigh in. Let's
go ahead,
feed right in. Go ahead.
First of all, Spencer, there might be more pressure than ever now because you're playing an SMU, okay, which teams get tighter. Let me tell you something. I don't envy Ryan Day right now. Ryan Day's got Tennessee coming in. They just had a horrible loss against Michigan. You want to talk about seat getting hot, Doc? The guy's been phenomenal, except in games against Michigan. He's 0-4. And now this game another home game. If he loses this, I guarantee Ryan Day will get fired coming off the field.
So you think if Tennessee beats Ohio State, you think that's the end? Those guys will just go nuts.
Oh, absolutely.
Their hair will be on fire. So to speak.
You really think so?
I do. I absolutely do.
I don't know who would be better at Ohio State than Ryan.
Well,
Day.
You can see. Well, that, you know what?
But if you're an Ohio State alum. And you see them in kind of they're in the playoffs, but they're in a play-in game.
Yep.
This is a disappointing year, and they've had a lot of ups, but some downs.
Doctor, you know what? Michigan's been mediocre all year. They've lost five games, and the embarrassment that they lost to, how they lost. They've got these five-star kids. They got a $20 million roster, and when they got smacked, they wanted people in Ohio wanted Ryan Day fired. Spencer, you can go 1-11 in Ohio State, but as long as you beat Michigan, that's
no,
it.
I know. And I listen, you said that teams won't remember you unless you win the championship. Those are your words that you just said. Well, I disagree. I'm always going to remember this Arizona State team. The people in Boise are always going to remember Ashton Gentry and this team. The SMU Mustangs are going to remember this team. And for Oregon to go 13-0 and win a Big Ten championship, like back in 19, we didn't even have national championships. Growing up, you had the BCS and co-national champions. And to me, like, this Oregon season to go 13-0 is such an incredible accomplishment that I think it means a lot to win a Big Ten championship. It's a ring. I mean, those kids are going to remember the podium. I saw Dan Lanning crying with his wife, Sophia Lanning, on the field. It was a beautiful scene. It was one of the greatest days in Oregon history, and you have to talk to an Oregon fan about that.
I want to now go to another related topic, which is the auto bid system. The fact that ASU wins the Big 12, the fact that Boise State gets an auto bid, and there's no reseeding, that is not reseeding as if the hair moving back, but as far as reseeding, like seeding, some certain leagues do reseed, and there's been a lot of talk about the conference committee really doesn't have a lot of latitude. And once they've decided this is going to be the format and there's no reseeding, they don't have a lot of wiggle room. So they can't look qualitatively at strength of schedule as to the teams. And there's really no wiggle room. That could be good or bad. What do you think the idea of auto bid, Spence? And I'm going to have Josh weigh in on that. Go ahead.
I actually like it, because if there wasn't any auto bids, then teams from these leagues you wouldn't have any representation of these teams and these leagues if it weren't for a conference championship. And I think winning a conference championship is a big deal. Now, to put, I guess, Boise above like your Penn States of the world, like, I don't know about an automatic bye. Maybe they should just be in the playoff field. I mean, this is tough. This is the first iteration of this. It's not perfect, okay? But we're all just trying to figure it out.
What do you think about auto bids, Josh?
I think they're awful, Doc.
Okay.
I think,
and explain why, please.
I think you need to go off a body of work. Strength of schedule has to come into play. What benefit does Alabama have playing a non-conference game such as a Penn State or a Notre Dame or something like that of nature? Because if you have these auto bids, it takes – strength of schedule you can throw right out the window. You have coaches every week that vote on these polls, and then you've got, like, the strength of schedule. Why if I'm an SEC team, would I ever play anybody that's a challenge in another Big Five school? Because everybody in the SEC is generally ranked in the top 25, 6-7 teams in the 25. You got Indiana. If you went strength of schedule, Indiana doesn't make it. SMU doesn't make it.
You're right, and ASU was ranked 14, and they played Iowa State 13. So, again, they had a good win, but they would be on the very edge.
Yep.
ASU would be on the edge of the playoffs rather than getting
a bye. But, Josh, according to that theory, then Indiana would be out after going 11-1.
Well, Spencer, I guess you answer that just the way college basketball does. Schedule tougher non-conference games, so you don't have.
But these are scheduled out, Kurt. These are scheduled out 6 years in advance. So by what you're saying is Indiana can be perfect and not make the playoff, basically.
Well, Spencer,
I don't think that's right. I think that you should reward winning, and if you lose three more games, you shouldn't be in. And fine, if we have to get rid of non-conference great games, I totally agree with that. Let's just have great conference games then.
There's
too many teams in these playoffs anyway. There's too many teams in these playoffs.
I don't know about that.
So one thing is, I think it's clear that you're going to have more teams in the playoffs. You're probably going to have 14. It's going to go from 12 to 14 and eventually to 16.
Yes.
Just so it's more symmetric and there'll probably be less auto buys. I don't really think when they go to 16, I think it's just better because teams are going to play teams. And I know that you don't agree with it because you're an old school guy.
No, like Ohio State shouldn't be in this playoff. You lost to Michigan. You shouldn't be in the playoff. You know, like that game didn't matter. Like if Ohio State goes on and wins a national title, like the Michigan game's going to lose significance. You know, so wouldn't it be nice, Josh, if it were seven teams in these playoffs or eight teams, wouldn't it be great? Like, why do we need to have a whole month longer of football?
Well, because it makes more money. Now you're generating it.
Exactly. But do you like it personally?
Spencer, I don't mind this right now. I really don't. I think where we're at is I think it's going to get to 16 teams. I think that's what it's going to be. I look at, to be honest, with the SEC only getting three bids, you know, it's shocking because they're that good. But then again, I'll say this. As I spoke to several people that are like Charlie's, who loves Alabama, you don't lose to Vanderbilt. You don't lose to Oklahoma, a down Oklahoma
team. In the way they got killed against Oklahoma, yeah. It's the end of the season.
Yep.
That score was shocking.
Alabama's not very good.
Did they have 3 points in that game?
Yeah.
I didn't see the whole game, but let me ask you this. How did they do? Was Oklahoma that much better? Was their defense better? Did they turn the ball over 10
Alabama.
Times? How did Alabama lose that game?
Alabama's
I don't know.
Offense,
I didn't see
Alabama's offense is so inconsistent. It could either play very well and run the ball, or you could have the quarterback there, Milroe, throw interceptions and be downright terrible. I mean, if you watch them against Tennessee, their offense against the Vols was really putrid. And then if you watch the second half of Bama against Georgia, Georgia almost beat Alabama and came back. So Milroe is not an accurate thrower of the football. He is not the most consistent player. And he had like 3 pick-sixes against Oklahoma. And Oklahoma has a lot of defensive talent. So, yes, the SEC does have more talent pound for pound than any league. But it's good that in the postseason, every conference gets the same amount of teams because we're here for the most deserving. We're not here for the best teams.
Team
like Auburn, who's a five, who didn't even make a bowl game, would probably beat SMU. But that's not what we're here
and
for.
And I think Ole Miss, who obviously had their hiccups, but I think Ole Miss would beat SMU.
Yeah.
They'd certainly be favored. Ole Miss would be favored
but
against
ASU. But I'm glad
ASU.
That they're not in the playoffs because then the season wouldn't
matter.
Wouldn't
they be favored against ASU?
They would be honestly favored against every team in the playoffs.
But they just almost had an inconsistent hiccup. I was watching an interview from Kalen DeBoer, and he had an opposite take from you. He felt that scheduling like complete cupcakes in the beginning of the season, it doesn't really accomplish anything. And what he said, whether, you know, obviously, I won't say if he's on a hot seat, he's only been there for a year, but he believes they need to schedule tougher games in the beginning to try to have these committees focus in on them so they could be higher up in the rankings. And that's kind of counterintuitive. Josh, what do you think about DeBoer? I mean, he's a pretty smart guy.
I think this is why teams have done that in the past, Doc.
They bring in the cupcakes just because they just want to have a win and they want to win by 60 points. It doesn't make for good spectation. It's not good for anybody.
For Indiana,
what do you think?
I mean, I think I think the SEC is so tough. I think that really the problem is the conference realignment has kind of ruined the SEC because when they have Oklahoma and Texas in the league, like even though Oklahoma's down this year, Bruce, their defense is still so talented. So if the Big 12 still existed and the Pac-12, we would get this more classical system of that kind of equality. But the SEC now with Texas and Oklahoma is just such a gauntlet. It's cannibalism. And the SEC can't survive because you don't have divisions anymore, so you can't hide. And it's the SEC is almost a pro league, you know, and it just is so unequal.
I want to switch gears now. Two massive contracts were signed. Juan Soto, a massive contract. He's age 26. He's going to be under contract for the New York Mets, $60 million a year. And the New York Mets with Steve Cohen, they still have more money. They have money to spend. And Steve Cohen isn't worried about paying the luxury tax. So we have a league, the MLB, where there's no hard cap, and the winners continue to win.
Mm-hmm.
And the losing teams, and you could say, hey, there's certain years where the Rays or the Florida Marlins win, but just this precedent of teams just being able to spend massive amounts of money. And we could look at how many times has this really panned out. Albert Pujols, that didn't pan out. Mike Trout, that when you give people, these players, that many years, it's very rare when they play to the end of the contract. And for a certain, from you know, obviously all the players love it, but I just, there's something that rubs me the wrong way about that. Josh, what do you think?
I think it's ridiculous, Doc. I think the contract, I was on the conversation last night, and I said, who's bidding on them? Who's bidding on these players? What teams are driving up that much revenue? I mean, when we saw the contract for Otani, he won the MVP as a DH because he couldn't pitch. He had Tommy John surgery. I think it's absolutely ridiculous. You know, it's baffling to me. You see a lot of bad contracts. Trey Turner looks like he has a bad contract right now. Dr. Lewis, I've talked with...
No, we're good. Continue.
I basically, these contracts are absolutely hideous.
But Josh, this is players making money. This is the league just making money. So you're not. It's a players' league. It's not an owners' league. It's Juan Soto making so much money. You know, it's a total free market system, and it is going to create a little bit of unfairness. If you cap the system, what would your solution be, though, to this?
I believe Charlie's on the line. Charlie, welcome into Rover Sports.
Hey, Doc, how are you guys? Sorry, I had a basketball practice.
No, absolutely. So just to weigh in a little bit, is there any way to fix MLB? You obviously saw the Soto contract. You saw Max Fried signed a very nice contract for the Yankees, kind of a revenge contract. You know, they lost Soto, so I think they needed a little revenge. Max Fried is a good pitcher, signed at a good number, but not Juan Soto dollars. Do you see this ever changing, or do you think this is just a slippery slope? What are your thoughts about that contract for Soto until he's age 41?
I think the worst thing to happen to the Phillies was the Yankees losing Soto, because now they're going to go scoop everyone up. But the Soto contract, well, again, basically, let's face it. This is a 8-year contract. I know they say it's 15, but they are going to be, you know, like everyone else. What's going to happen after 35 is they're just going to be wasting money, but they don't care. They're this Cohen guy. He's got a lot of money. He's trying to buy a championship. I don't think their lineup is even in the top 10 after the trade. So, end of the day, yeah, great move for New York. It'll fill seats, but it's not going to win them a championship until they fill in the gaps.
Yeah, and you're right. And you know what's interesting is that the crazy thing is about all these sports is the money, the cap, it just keeps going up. Like the NBA guys are making 50 and 60. So these owners are thinking that in 2035 that players are going to be making like $100 million by the time we get to that. And I think that the 16 years is the crazy part. If you were signing him for 7 years, it could totally be worth it. Now, Steve Cohen wants to continue to sign players as well.
That's a good point, Spence.
Okay, I'm sorry, Charlie. We are up against the break. We are going to be talking Eagles and our fearless picks in the second half hour. We are Rover Sports.
WWDB 860 AM Philadelphia and WPEN HD2 Burlington, Philadelphia.
Big emerging. Welcome into Rover Sports. We are in the second segment. We are perched here at One Ballot Plaza. We are sharing this wonderful studio with a great producer, Colin Newby, and we have the exact same equipment and the same, I won't say the same signal, similar signal, which is 97.5 HD2. And that's every bit as good as 97.5 HD1. Also, WWDBAM.com. Many of you are going to be streaming this back on Bruce Grossinger Facebook. And again, my Facebook page is secure. We hired a Marine cybersecurity expert. My Facebook page might as well be like gold bullion in Fort Knox. That's how secure it is. So for a second half hour, I want to start off with just some rapid fire about the home team, and that's the Philadelphia Eagles. They played, in my view, their second worst game. The worst game was against the Bucks, but this game against the Carolina Panthers, I attended it in person. It was nice weather. It was a very boring game. I almost fell asleep in the first half. It was that boring. And I know people that actually left at halftime, and they just looked horrible. They looked putrid. 39 yards passing. And the upshot of this game, and you know what? The Panthers had a chance. If their wide receiver would have just caught the ball with two hands instead of trying to catch it and brace himself on the ground, I think we could all agree that's an Eagles loss. 30 seconds left, that's an Eagles loss. So they really backed into that loss. They escaped they escaped a loss. And the upshot of that is that that Brandon Graham, one of our favorite people, Justin speaking, like, you know, we speak here sometimes. Sometimes we'll say things that we want to take back. But the thing about live radio is you can't take it back. It's out there. It's not like you're writing a book and you can edit it. So live radio, there's some pressure there. And Brandon Graham mentioned that there are some acrimony and controversy between Jalen Hurts and A.J. Brown. So, Josh, you heard that. What? How much weight do you place on it? How do you equate that? How does that bear on the season?
Doc, I mean, you look at the passing offense; they're ranked 31st in the league right now. Jalen Hurts threw just over for 100 yards. Guys like to eat, you know. And A.J. Brown has been outspoken, and he wants it. Now, let's be honest: the Eagles keep winning; they're 11-2. All right. Saquon Barkley just set the franchise record for most rushing yards in a season. He beat LeSean McCoy. But guys are getting frustrated, and they want Jalen to throw the ball. Now they're winning games. They're winning games, but Jalen does not look good right now. Dr. Lewis is
the most anti. You're right. I mean, Dr. Lewis isn't here tonight, but I think overall, Dr. Lewis is the sourest person, the most negative. He would like to have Tanner McKee. Yeah. He might even have small hands from Pittsburgh. Kenny, little boy Pickens.
Yeah, so I think in many ways, Doc, I think...
That's close to how his name is said, actually.
In many ways, I think Jalen Hurts, there's a lot of pressure. And what Kellen Moore has done with the innovative offense of his is he's just handed the ball off to Saquon Barkley.
Spence, you watch this offense.
I just
who do you fault? Spence, listen.
Yes.
Where do you place blame on the passing offense? Go ahead.
It's tough. I mean, the Eagles, their whole design is to hide Jalen Hurts, because when they let Jalen Hurts wild, like against the New Orleans Saints, he threw for 300 yards. But when you throw the ball a lot, you turn the ball over. So it's tough because the quarterback who has the most passing yards probably in the league per game might be like a Jameis Winston that I love to watch. But that style, unfortunately, leads to reckless. It leads to carnage. It leads to interceptions.
It led to three interceptions in that game against the Broncos.
Right.
But it did. It made for a great – that was maybe the most exciting game. With Bo Nix and him, it was super exciting.
But with analytics comes less risk. The sport becomes a lot less fun. Like, look at the quarterbacks that are winning games. You know, you have your Brock Purdy's of the world that are not really airing the ball out. And passing yardage in the NFL has gone down. We grew up in the age of gunslingers like Brett Favre, Dante Culpepper, McNair, Peyton Manning. We really grew up when quarterbacks would throw a lot. And the Eagles, they're all just about analytics. Like the first four games of the season, Saquon Barkley said, these are preseason games. We practically do not care about them. The Eagles training camp, total joke. So they just game the system. And that's why they're not a likable team at all, because they just game the system all for the playoffs. They're all just about analytics. They don't really care about the regular season. That's why the product was so terrible against Carolina, because they put everything into that Ravens game. You went to the Browns-Eagles game. The Eagles games are boring. They win, but they're just boring games to watch. Okay. And it's all analytics. And the first four games of the season were a joke.
Okay, let me respond to that. So number one, I don't find the Eagles, they're 11-2. I haven't found the boring. I found them one of the most exciting teams. And why is that? It's because their defense is so exciting. Because they have Vic Fangio. They're actually hitting. They're doing padded practices on Wednesday. They didn't do that last year. So Fangio is actually working on form tackling. You can see Zach Bond. You can see Nakobe Dean. Totally different player. And also, I look at Saquon Barkley. I don't think there's – I have never seen a more exciting running back. And I love Wilbert Montgomery, and I remember him. Brian Westbrook, Shady McCoy. This guy's the most exciting guy. And so it's not all about excitement, but I think we're sophisticated enough to appreciate the fact that you have a dominant offensive line. And they've been saying for the last 10 years, run the ball, run the ball. And they're finally doing so.
Doc, and you know what? You brought Saquon Barkley in. and he's doing exactly that. He's taking the pressure off Jalen Hurts. Now, with that being said, you're going to ruffle some feathers. You got a talented receiving room with A.J. Brown, who, as we can see, Charlie, I think he's one of the best receivers in the league. He can go up and get it anytime he wants. Devontae Smith, obviously a great receiver. But Jalen Hurts, I think when you own time of possession, it takes it away from the other team from scoring. And when you have a guy like Saquon Barkley, it's hard not to put the ball in his hands.
I want to throw this to Charlie. As far as Jalen Hurts, you follow him. You're an Alabama guy. Give me a 30-second critique on him, then we're going to roll into our fearless picks. Go ahead.
On Devontae Smith?
No, on Jalen, please. Jalen
Hurts. I think. Look, only in Philly could you find this kind of problem with an 11-2 team. Hurts wasn't a problem until Sunday when they almost looked. Then they should have lost that game. Let's face it. I saw that coming a mile away. I think other people did too. It could have been a look ahead to Pittsburgh, but it's not that he's not completing passes, or they're just not throwing the ball. Is that his fault, or is that the Kellen Moore's fault?
Yes, so absolutely right. And again, you and I were on the right side of that. I felt like, for a lot of reasons, that was a trap game and that they gave way too many points to the Panthers. I didn't expect the Eagles to lose, but the fact that they were lethargic, lackluster effort, Dallas Goedert, very disappointing. He's been hurt so many times. He's got a knee problem. The Eagles never disclose the nature of knee injuries. It's frustrating. You always know what's going on with concussions. But the fact this guy Goedert, and he's a good player, he's missed so much time from injury. I really see that the Eagles are going to be drafting a tight end, and they're probably going to look elsewhere from Goedert. Because luckily they've got Calcaterra, who I think has been surprisingly good. But I agree that Hurts is doing what they're asking of him. He does, to his advantage, he looks strong. His knee looks 100%. He's got his speed back. He's a different quarterback. And frankly, they've needed him. Hurts has needed to run and get those first downs. Without his running, they wouldn't have won that lackluster game. And obviously, Saquon, in the first half was sluggish overall. It was just bad. And the first quarters throughout, for a team that's 11-2 to have no points in the first quarter, I don't know if that's ever happened. Well, I haven't seen the stats. But in any event, it's time to roll into our fearless picks. Here we go.
All right. Well, boys, it was fun. We picked 10 games last week. It was diverse across the board. But congratulations to Dr. Lewis and Dr. Grossinger. Both went 8-2. So let's get into it. Week 5. Let's kick off Thursday night. The L.A. Rams, 7-6, travel to San Francisco, 6-7. Doc, the NFC West is the ugliest division in football, okay? Someone's going to have to take the division. It almost looks like someone's going to be 500 or less that's going to end up winning it. So you got L.A., 7-6. Puka Nacua, great. He's playing awesome. I had over 12 catches, 140-plus yards last week. And then he's going down to San Francisco. San Francisco on our third-string running back, Isaac Guerrero, Greendo. You're giving up 2.5. Brock Purdy looks solid.
So you're saying that San Fran is giving 2.5 to the Rams?
Yes, sir.
Okay. I would say that my feeling is the Rams have looked very, very good. And when you go to San Francisco, even though they're regionally very close, I think it is a rivalry game. I see that Brock Purdy is looking really good. Kittle, the team is looking great. I think it's going to be a good game. I don't see the Rams winning this game, nor do I believe that's the right amount of points for me. I'm taking the Niners in this game.
Bruce, I agree with you. I think that a lot of the public's going to be on the Rams because of recency bias and because they put together a really good game against the Bills. I think the Niners' defense, it has to pose a bigger threat than Buffalo's. And I don't think that Rams defense is that great either. So the Niners, they played well against Chicago, but it was amazing how well they played. 380 yards compared to Chicago got 4 yards in an entire half. Isn't that incredible?
It's Bears theory.
How hard is that to do? 4 yards.
For the Bears
in two
and the Jets,
quarters.
It's very possible.
Amazing.
Josh, what do you see in this game?
Doc, Kerryon Williams is running the ball really well. I think San Francisco's going to play close, but I think the Rams are going to win it. So I like Puka. I like Matt Stafford. I like them studying the ship.
Puka's great. When I first heard his name, I thought it was a joke. But now, he ain't no joke. Colin Newby.
I think the Niners are doing a little better. I'll take San Fran to cover.
Charlie, what do you see in this match of Titans?
Where's it at? The game?
San Francisco.
The game's in San Fran. I believe they're giving, 2.5 points to the Rams?
Yep.
Okay.
Coach, where did I go last week? I was worse than 8-2?
You were 6-4, buddy.
No, go back and check that.
Oh, this is gonna be good. We're gonna have a pillow fight.
No way. No way. I lost Iowa State in college in one pro game.
We're gonna figure that out. We're gonna finish that one off air. What do you see, Charlie, in this battle of NFC West teams?
San Fran's home. San Fran. I'm gonna go Rams.
Taking Rams. Game two, please.
We got Tampa Bay, 7-6, traveling to the L.A. Chargers, who are 8-5. L.A. Chargers getting the home field -3 bump.
Tampa Bay, L.A. Chargers. So I think this is maybe one of the more difficult games to pick because I've seen Tampa Bay is either Dr. Jekyll or Mr. Hyde, and who knows who's going to show up. Mm-hmm. The fact they're playing the Chargers, who have played better, like their coach, I'm not feeling the Buccaneers going all the way west. And for some reason, I think that Mr. Hyde's going to show up here for the Buccaneers. I'm taking the Chargers in this game, but I think it's a weird game. Teams don't play each other. It's just a weird game. That's what I would say.
Very interesting game in so many ways. I mean, we have to see about Herbert's health. Chargers, very brutal loss, you know, to the Chiefs. Could be a little bit emotional. I think I like Tampa. Pulling a little upset. Tampa off a game against Oakland in which they got right in the second half. I really like Tampa.
I like Ladd McConkey, and I like the LA Chargers and Justin Herbert.
Is Ladd McConkey hurt? Anybody know?
He was hurt last week.
He was hurt last week.
How about Herbert?
Is he going to play?
He should play, hopefully.
Okay, but nonetheless, you like the Chargers.
Yeah, Jim Harbaugh's done a great job with this.
I obviously leaning in that direction. Colin?
The Bucs do have like a weird quality about them, but I want to take them, and I'll go outright money line on that.
Charlie?
Where's the game at?
The game's in Los Angeles, SoFi. Yeah.
And 3.5?
Yep.
Just three.
I'll go Tampa.
But you feel like me. You don't have a great feeling about this game, do you? Charlie's going to go deep into it, analyze it, dissect it.
Oh, he'll be ready by Saturday.
By Saturday, he's going to be closer.
We're pinning him now.
You'll damn well know if Ladd McConkey's played in that game. Yeah. Game three.
Jordan Love and Green Bay. Josh Jacobs played really well. They're traveling up to Seattle. Seattle's 8-5. Seattle's +3 on that one.
So +3. So Green Bay is traveling, but giving the home team, they're going up to Seattle with the 12th man. Ooh. Well, again, I tell you what, I'm struggling with the game. I could see this game going either way, but I have to pick a team. So when in doubt, I'm taking the pack. I've lost any games I've lost have been on Seattle. You could look at it. They're the games I've lost because I just don't respect the team very much, even at home. I'm taking the pack. The pack is back on this game.
So why are you So I'm the same boat as you. I always doubt Seattle, and they always
kill us.
So I'm not going to go with the Packers. I'm going to try to make amends with Seattle.
You're going to other way. You're going to swing it.
I picked Arizona, and that whole thing was a dumpster fire. So,
that was a disaster. So as I picked Arizona, too.
I think Seattle's like 8-5. I think Seattle's having a sneaky, sneaky good record here. I think Seattle's going to win that division. They're sneaky.
I'm going to go with Green Bay. I think Green Bay has got to stay right in the middle of that, the best division in football, the NFC North. So I'm going to take Green Bay on the road.
Colin?
I like Green Bay to get back on track also.
Charlie Bowles?
Seattle at home with the points.
There we go. This is game number four. Well, we are going through actually at a beautiful pace, and I like the fact there's a lot of editorialization. I just made up the word. Go ahead.
Absolutely. So Miami, up and down year, 5-7. Doc, here's a stat for you. Tyreek Hill has 5 touchdowns this year. He also has 5 brand-new babies this year, okay?
You say are you serious about
yes.
five
yeah.
brand new bases?
Yes, in 2020.
That sounds expensive. I guess that's why he has to play really well. I don't know if I've ever heard that stat in sports.
Yeah, well, I saw
that's
it.
A guy.
No,
Cromartie. Sean Kemp.
Dave
I don't know if he came. If they came such rapid fire.
Yeah.
I don't know. I mean that in a good way.
How many different women? Like three or four.
Collins, why get on this here?
Cromartie can't name his kids. Remember on Hard Knocks,
yes.
he tried to?
He had like 14 of them, yes.
So, Josh, how many different women? Like four?
Five. Obviously, five different women.
That's impressive.
As a doctor's viewpoint, I could give you that answer fairly easily.
And he's building a baseball team.
Well, let's actually get into the game.
Person.
We were already actually on time.
Sorry about
that. Here we go. No, that's okay.
What a stat.
But that was a great stat. You had to interrupt with that one.
Yeah, Tyreek Hill, I love it. He's going to have a lot of kids.
The cheetah has been running.
Okay, so here we go. Miami travels to Houston. Houston's 8-5. They're getting three minus three. Yeah, Miami's getting 3 points.
Miami's getting three. Okay, I believe in Tua, and I mean this is not an easy game to pick. I don't think Houston is the best home crowd ever. In fact, ever with that team, whether you're playing the Astros, I don't think they're a great home crowd. I see this as a game where Miami gets right, and they're going to have to feed those five kids. So in any event, I'm taking the Dolphins.
Man, I wish I could have Tyreek Hill's life. I mean, it's just, I mean, from a kid who grew
up.
He's
a lot more money. He could afford 50 more this year.
No, I know. But these women are just outstanding, I'm sure.
They're outstanding.
In every
possible. They're outstanding. By any metric, they're outstanding.
I mean, he's living the dream. And for those kids, I'm excited about them. They get to see an NFL Hall of Famer. But
very exciting.
But I really look at Miami, and in this spot, you're going to Houston, James Harden's hometown in Houston, where they bang trash cans. That's what their fans are all about.
Don't use the word bang in this discussion.
So I really like the Houston Texans actually at home. I think that they are the class of that division. That division, by the way, the AFC South, Bruce, it's never been good in 20 years. Incredible, right? That division has been horrible.
It has been.
But guess what? The Dolphins should have lost to the Jets. I'm taking Houston Texans off the bye week.
There you go.
You know, Doc, it's an interesting world. I'm going to stick with Miami. They've gotten hot. Tyreek's been playing really well. So I like Tua.
On and off the field.
Jalen, well, I wouldn't say he's being safe off the field, but, you know.
No, he's been like Mercury. He's been a little bit of a wild card.
Experimental.
He's experimental. He's got the look. You want to know better. Colin, who you picking?
I think Miami's getting back on track. I'll take him here.
Charlie, interesting commentary about this game. Who do you pick?
Houston has been a disappointment. Stroud has not had a fantastic year and made that leap. I think that line is sitting there for a reason. Miami's going to go in there and win.
All right. I like that from a selfish standpoint. We're here at game five.
Game of the week, maybe game of the year, possibly. We're looking at a Super Bowl preview. Buffalo 10-3, coming off a difficult loss for Josh Allen, 6 touchdowns, was a rock star. Going to Detroit. Detroit's 12-1. Detroit continues to find ways to win. Doc, where are we going?
Got to tell me the spread.
I'm sorry, the line's minus 2.5.
Wow.
So Buffalo's getting 2.5.
So Buffalo's getting 2.5. I do agree that this is the game of the year. And part of this is wishful thinking. This is one of the Eagles' last chances to have somebody knock down the Detroit Lions. And I believe if any team's going to do it, it's Buffalo. And I'm going to be wearing, along with the Kaminsky family, I'm going to be wearing that Bills helmet. And I believe it'll be a very good game. And I do believe in the Lions. But Buffalo and Josh Allen, look at you riding an MVP year, and I see this as a great game, and I see the Bills prevailing, and I see the Lions getting their second loss, which is going to make it very interesting here in Philly land.
Okay, the line's 2.5. Boy, Buffalo's defense has to show up, though. That's what I'm worried about, Bruce, in this game, but I kind of like the revenge spot for Buffalo. I think Buffalo will be really, really motivated in this matchup. This game's incredibly tough to pick. But I'm going to go Buffalo in a revenge spot. So,
Josh?
I think Buffalo bounces back. I really do. I think Josh Allen will lock up the MVP this week.
Colin?
I like Buffalo outright here.
Buffalo outright. Charlie Bowles, this we can agree is going to be a really great game to watch. Two great teams, potential Super Bowl preview for sure. Two teams probably favored to go there. What do you see in this game?
I think it's going to be relatively mild in Buffalo this weekend. 41 degrees of kickoff and rain. I think the running game for Detroit will be the difference.
Detroit, right?
I know. No, it's in Buffalo, right?
Oh, is it? Is it?
Where's the game at?
Look, just give
in
us
Detroit.
One moment.
Oh, it is?
Yeah. Okay, never mind. Sorry. It will be mild in Buffalo, but the game will be played in Detroit.
And Detroit's 2.5?
Yes.
Oh, give me Buffalo. That's a ridiculous line. Give me Buffalo.
I love it.
It changed my theory that quick.
In our last 4 minutes, we're picking the game of the week, which really is the game of the week. We usually say that facetiously.
Yes.
It will be the Pittsburgh Steelers crossing over to their interstate rivals, the Philadelphia Eagles. This game will have a lot of different layers. We know a ton of Steelers fans and obviously a few Eagles fans, too, listen to this show. What is the spread of this game, Josh?
-5.
-5. So the Steelers get -5. So if I'm going to analyze this, I will say that the Steelers haven't won a game in Philadelphia since anybody?
No. When actually? Do you know?
I think it's might be the 1970s. They don't play that often, but it's might be the 1970s. So whatever that's worth, obviously these are different.
They won
teams.
One at home. Remember Chase Claypool had that one big game, but that was in Pittsburgh.
No, that's the whole point.
Right.
So I'm looking at 5 points. I'm looking at a Steelers team. What's a record there with the Steelers?
10-3. I think. In all honesty, not for nothing, I think the Steelers have had the most impressive season. I could have never envisioned them to be 10-3. Russell Wilson wasn't the starting quarterback for the first 4 or 5 weeks. They had Justin Fields. Justin Fields played really well for them. I think Mike Tomlin does it better than anybody year in and year out, and they don't do it with a ton of talent.
So what I would say is, I agree. I believe in Arthur Smith. I believe in Mike Tomlin. I believe the Eagles could well lose this game, and it just like last week, I see a squeaker, 3 points or less if the Eagles do win. And again, we're still looking at the backlash between Jalen Hurts and A.J. Brown. I think that's not going to be relevant. I'm looking at the absence of Dallas Goedert. I'm looking at guys like Blankenship coming back from a concussion. And also, guy who's always hurt is Slay. He made a good play. I'm just seeing a lot of guys that are banged up, and I see this as a game. Obviously, the most important, most difficult game in the Eagles' schedule, it's at home. I don't think it's a trap game at all. But I believe 5 points is too many points for me. And just like last week, I cruised to an easy victory picking the Panthers with all those points. I'm picking the Steelers, and I'm taking the 5 points. And I would say I'm 50-50 on who's going to actually win the game. Spencer.
Yeah, I think it's a lot of points for a reason. I think Vegas is begging people to take the Steelers. I think that the public will be over the Steelers. The Steelers, Bruce, they're an okay road team. They beat Denver, but that was Bo Nix's second game. And they played the Colts. And, I mean, I really don't believe in the Steelers' offense. If the Eagles can shut down the Ravens' offense, I don't believe in the Steelers' offense against this Eagles' defense. I'm taking the Eagles to win,
Josh.
I'm taking Pittsburgh. Too many points, Doc.
Colin.
I like the Eagles to cover here.
Charlie, you've got 20 seconds.
Steelers, my team that I grew up, my favorite team. I think Steelers, I think Philly's in turmoil, and I think this week you'll hear all the chirping on Monday.
I want to thank everybody for logging in. This hour flew by. I want to thank everybody producing this. Kyle Newby did a great job. The sound has been great, I could say, every time. It even sounds good on my iPhone. And Matt Vito, he's going to be breaking this up into two segments, which will be, as it should be perhaps, the first segment ending at 8 o'clock sharp, and then the next segment. So I want to thank everybody for logging in, all the Facebook friends. Please like and share Rover Sports. That helps us. You don't have to pay any money for this, as far as you know. But we might be hacking it, and you might be paying money. But on that happy note, on that silly note, good night and good sports.
The Sports Doctor is on the air. Dr. Bruce Grossinger with Rover Sports Tuesday evenings at 7:30 on WWDB. Dr. Bruce and the Rover crew blend sports and pop culture to keep you entertained and thinking. Brought to you by the Philadelphia Regenerative Medicine and Stem Cell Institute, where Dr. Grossinger and his team help athletes and chronic pain sufferers heal faster and stronger, often without the need for drugs or surgery. Visit online at phillysportsdoc.com and tune in to WWDB Tuesday nights at 7:30 for Rover Sports.
The future depends on teachers. Every day, teachers are shaping our tomorrows, starting their students on journeys that will change the course of history. Right now, in a classroom somewhere in the United States, there's a teacher inspiring a future scientist who will make preventing pandemics their life's work, sharpening the mind of an aspiring environmentalist who will help combat climate change, and generating possibilities for a student who will be the first in their family to graduate college. It all starts with teachers who meet challenges with creativity, who reinvent education for the future, who work towards a school system that lifts up every child, regardless of race, income, or zip code, and who enable the full potential of our students, our communities, and our country. Explore a career that leaves a legacy you can be proud of. Shape the future. Teach. Learn more and receive free support at teach.org.
We are there in your community. Small business owners, mechanics, police officers, homemakers. And we are there serving our nation in the Air Force Reserve. When medical emergencies arise, we meet the challenge. In cybersecurity, protecting and defending in cyberspace. When natural disasters happen, we are there in space. As a strong part of the nation's defense, we are there in the community, and we are there for our nation. We share a vision to make a difference, united and focused, taking pride in being there in service of our country. We are Reserve Citizen Airmen, and we are there with over 180 different jobs to serve your country. Air Force Reserve. Go to afreserve.com for more information.
Joe Buck and John Smoltz welcoming you back to the City Center Convenience Mart. Well, John, the stage is set for the final transaction.
That's right, Joe. Heather's moment has arrived, and you just hope all that training pays off.
Heather lays down her purchase, but Randy rings it up as slowly as he can.
He is a wily veteran.
It gives Heather's eyes the chance to wander.
Uh-oh.
Yep, she's looking at the cigarettes.
There's nothing good back there. Quit now, and in 5 years, your odds of getting certain cancers drop 50%.
Meanwhile, Randy's stone-faced. He's giving nothing away. He just stands there, wetting his cashier's finger on that sponge.
Heather toes the rubber.
Here we go. Heather's arm is in motion. But instead of pointing at the back wall, she just grabs the gum off the counter.
That's a slick move.
Heather, back, back, back. She is out of there. Even Randy tips his cap to Heather. Stand Up to Cancer and Rally wants you to reduce your risk for cancer.
Go to takeahealthystand.org.
It's pouring rain. It's real dark outside. Your heart starts beating really, really fast. You've never done anything so hard in your life. This is boot camp. This is the real thing now. It's such extreme pain, you don't understand how you can finish. I began to feel that there was no way I was ever going to have my title, U.S. Marine. It takes special inner strength, courage, and desire to do this. I was just thinking, I'm so close. I'm so close. And when I finished, I was like, I'm done. I did it. The moment I will never forget is when this drill instructor that I admire so much comes up to me straight in front of me, put her arm on my shoulder and said, good morning, Marine.
PFC Summer Volkman became a Marine. Can you? Visit Marines.com or call 1-800-MARINES. The few, the proud, the Marines.
In 2007, Marine First Lieutenant Travis Manning was killed in Iraq after saving his wounded teammates. Travis's legacy lives on through the five words he spoke before leaving for his final deployment. If not me, then who? Words that today fuel the spirit of Travis Manion Foundation. Words that live in veterans, families of the fallen, and inspired civilians who go out of their way to find a way, who help others with the help of others, who bounce back after each setback, who make good on good intentions. Through Travis Manion Foundation, if not me, then who, are words that can live in you too. Show the world what your character is made of, because character is invisible until it's not. Find out how you can strengthen the character of your community alongside empowered veterans, families of the fallen, and inspired civilians at TravisManion.org. That's TravisManion.org.
The future depends on teachers. Every day, teachers are shaping our tomorrows, starting their students on journeys that will change the course of history. Right now, in a classroom somewhere in the United States, there's a teacher inspiring a future scientist who will make preventing pandemics their life's work, sharpening the mind of an aspiring environmentalist who will help combat climate change, and generating possibilities for a student who will be the first in their family to graduate college. It all starts with teachers who meet challenges with creativity, who reinvent education for the future, who work towards a school system that lifts up every child, regardless of race, income, or zip code.